This is The Topic is Trek, episode 156, for Friday, April 5th, 2024. Coming up in this episode, it's holiday time. Variety does a data dump, or is it data dump? Not quite sure. The chase begins again. All that and more right now on The Topic is Trek. Parlez-vous français, Admiral Janeway? Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. For the video part of the show, I feel like I need to have blue sheets of paper and be tapping them on a desk as we're beginning the show, just to have that news feel for the beginning. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Clinton, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts. And as I always say here on the thrill-packed episodes of The Topic is Trek, in order to be a co-host, there must be other hosts. So first, beaming in to join us from parts unknown, remote parts unknown this week, with the hip new catchphrase that maybe somebody will be talking about tomorrow, it's Mr. Craig Stepp.
I'd like to phone a friend.
Well, phones. I don't. Are phones a thing? I don't know.
I'd like to communicate a friend.
Yeah, there you go. I'd like to subspace a friend if I could.
Transport a friend.
Yeah.
And there as you can hear, joining us is also our other co-host. It's Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Hi, it's great to be here again.
Well, it's great to have you here and on a very exciting week, because not only do we have lots of news, but we also have
new show
here of season 5 of Discovery.
So sad. Final, it's so sad. Like, it's the beginning the
final
of the
spin,
end.
I like to call it. Yes. So we have a lot to cover, so we're going to try to get right to it. But of course, in order for that to happen, I legally apparently have to check in with Charlie X to see if it's okay. So Charlie,
contractually,
it's in the contract. Yeah. Yep.
We all set to go with subspace chatter?
And I think he's contractually obligated to deny again.
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
Yeah, I think it's going to go the same way. By the way, I want to give a quick shout out to listener Diane, to Carl, and to Ken for their help gathering up a few of the stories we're going to be covering tonight's show.
All right.
All right. So let's begin with you, Craig.
All right. So season 2 of Star Trek Prodigy is here.
Woo-hoo!
Rejoice. Sort of. It's in France.
VPN? Craig, you went on mute. What happened? I did not mute you.
You've gone away.
Your mute icon is up.
Why is that muted?
You bumped a key or something.
I don't know. All right. So where did I leave off?
Well, just say we're in France. You know, in France. Prodigy's in France, and going to explain why.
All right. So it's in France, and it took everybody by surprise, including Netflix and the series co-creators Dan and Kevin Hageman. It looks like when Paramount Plus decided to drop Prodigy, no one thought to update the international deals. And that meant the rights holders could begin streaming the show on their networks after what would have been the end of season two's run on Paramount Plus. So far, urging by the Hagemans to avoid reading and sharing spoilers has largely been observed. After all, if everyone knows what happens in the first episodes or the whole season of Netflix premiere, then it's going to draw smaller numbers, decreasing the odds of a third season order.
Right. So I certainly have not even gone searching out for any of this stuff, and I didn't see anything in any of the news articles. It seems like everyone's kind of keeping that low profile, which is good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It must be, they must be doing a good job because I didn't see, I didn't even know it was available in France.
And it's in French, so that should be a big help. I'll get my son to translate it. All right. Next up, website HallmarkStarTrekOrnaments.com reports that the 2024 Hallmark Dreambook features 7 Star Trek ornaments for this year's holiday season, and 2 will be minis. Let's get into it. The standard ornaments include Spock and Data standing on a black base, and this ornament can play dialogue from the Unification episode of TNG. Also in the set is the first ever Dr. Beverly Crusher ornament. Yay!
With a beautiful red ribbon coming out of her head.
Finally.
Well, hey, that's...
Finally, Beverly Crusher's making a cameo in Christmas.
The Star Trek Holiday Special. Don't miss it.
No, please. No. And also there's a Talosian from the original Trek pilot.
It's Francis.
Captain Pike seated in the captain's chair, as well as the first ornament to depict the Enterprise B, as seen in Star Trek Generations. Now, the 2 mini ornaments are Spock in his 1979 gray motion picture uniform, as well as a mini version of the Enterprise itself, the refit that was seen in Star Trek the Motion Picture. So that those are the 2 losable items that you're going to be buying this year and go, I know I've got them someplace. I put them on the tree and I can't find them anymore.
Mine are in my office. I rotate them out on my shelf behind me.
A good idea.
Yeah.
All right. What's up next? That's you, Chuck.
Oh, Pluto TV has added a 3rd Star Trek channel to its free streaming service.
Yay.
This one will be dedicated to showing episodes of Star Trek Deep Space 9. In order. The other existing 2 channels include one that features episode of the original series and The Next Generation, while the other, labeled More Star Trek, features episodes of Voyager.
Voyager.
Pluto TV. I can't read Voyager ever again. Even at the Air and Space Museum, I still said Voyager. Pluto TV.
Did you kind of rub the wording off on it?
Right. I went right up to that satellite on the ceiling and took a grinder to it. Pluto TV, owned by Paramount Global, is available without subscription or login.
Excellent.
Yeah, I love that Pluto TV. You can, like at lunch, I would just sit down and drop in into an episode while I'm eating, and then, you know, that's it. You don't have to think about it.
The nice thing is, it's like old-time television. It's on. You can't rewind
or anything. You missed it.
Yep.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of other good channels on there, too. A lot of old TV.
You watch Star Trek, I usually watch the news on my lunch break. It's the only time I have to catch up.
I want to read about the future.
All right. Well, the future right now is you reading the next story, Craig.
Ooh, all right.
Segue. That was good.
So you may have seen the video from the theme from Star Trek First Contact being played during a ceremony to induct Sweden into NATO. Website TrekMovie.com reports that it's not at all as it may appear. It turns out that during the actual raising of the Swedish flag, the national anthem of Sweden and the national anthem of NATO were played. However, ahead of the ceremony, musical selections were at the discretion of the performing military bands.
And I'm guessing there was a Trek fan.
That would be really cool if they played that one from First Contact.
Well, that's what they were playing.
Oh, right.
So it was
just
cool.
Just, you got like, it right. Just like she says, Borg sounds Swedish.
Yeah.
That's right. All right. Let's move on to a big story that's going to be cover lots of things. So we're going to split it up among all of us to talk about this one. All right. On March 27th, Variety.com posted an article about the past, present, and potential future of Star Trek. The piece takes a high-level look at the state of the entire Trek franchise. Trek fans, like me, pored over the article looking for hints of what is yet to come. We'll highlight a few of the nuggets found in this Paramount Mountain-sized article. Okay, very good. First, we now know that nearly 1 in 5 Paramount Plus subscribers in the U.S. watch at least one Star Trek series, and that more than 50% of fans who watch one of the new Star Trek shows watch at least two other Star Trek shows. We also found out that Steve Yockey, creator of the Max series The Flight Attendant, has been brought on board as the new screenwriter for Star Trek IV.
Oh.
Now, between the two Trek films currently in development, this is the one that involves the Kelvin timeline. And it will probably close the book on the Chris Pine-led series of movies.
It's just too hard and expensive to get those people.
Exactly. All right.
Regarding Paramount Plus, the article revealed that the upcoming Starfleet Academy series will have something really big. The primary Academy set.
Wow.
Oh, I thought this was like an action figure thing. Too big. I can't fit
a coffee table like the one we talked about last.
Right. Well, it will include an atrium, mess hall, amphitheater, trees, multiple classrooms, and a view of the Golden Gate Bridge. It will be the largest single set ever created for Trek on TV, taking up nearly every square foot of Pinewood Toronto's 45,900 square foot mega space.
This mega stage. That's what they actually call it. They call that stage literally mega stage. If you go to their site, that's what it's called.
The mega stage. This soundstage is 60 feet tall. I'm sorry, I'm not giving the metric equivalents. We're sticking with freedom units here. The equivalent of a four-story building, and the set is so close to the ceiling. How close is it? The stage's fire suppression system had to be worked into the design.
That was the lamest joke ever.
I wasn't planning on being a setup to that joke. Yeah. Joke at all.
Moving on to Strange New Worlds. The article had an image of Spock in a red environmental suit, working in a never-before-seen science lab on the Enterprise. The key feature here is the transparent floor that sits over a four-foot-deep pool of water. We begin to wonder if this is Cetacean Ops.
Maybe.
Where's the beluga whale, guys?
So you see you're going to see a beluga kind of graze the glass during the show.
Okay. And we learned that, as we had suspected, season 3 of Strange New Worlds will not premiere until 2025. Wah, 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 wah. This is our sad trombone on this show.
Shoot at the sad trombone player. All right, next up.
So the article gave us a first look at Michelle Yeoh as Emperor Giorgio in the Section 31 streaming movie event. We see her leaning in to speak to a bald individual with their back to us. The unknown character has a metal collar around their neck and steel ridges are running around the length of their scalp.
It's Darth Vader Mohawk.
Yeah.
I love you, Anakin. Off. You're evil like me. Sorry.
She took Darth Vader's helmet off. And finally, also in connection with Section 31, perhaps the biggest surprise in the article was this spoiler. So if you don't want us to be spoiled, you can mute us or
wait.
Or something for here we go. Thank you. So here we go. Okay. Section 31 will find Giorgio speaking with a young Rachel Garrett.
Yes,
that Rachel Garrett. Apparently before she was in command of the Enterprise C. Garrett will be played by actress Casey Roll.
So You can start listening again. It's always hard when somebody mutes their audio. It's like, you can start listening again. They can't hear it. I don't know. So hopefully everybody's back.
Remind me, where did we see that statue of what everybody thought was Rachel Garrett? Remember we saw she was standing, it was a statue.
I do remember what you're talking about, but I don't remember where it was. But I do remember what you were talking about.
It was in Picard, I think. I think it was in Picard and there was a statue of her. So, yeah.
Could be. All right, let's move on. And here we go again. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that Paramount has rejected a sweetened Apollo Global Management deal to buy all of Paramount. It's all of Paramount rather than before they just wanted the studios for $11 billion. This is $26 billion for everything.
Oh, wow.
Which works out to around a 50% premium on the current share price.
Nice.
Wow.
And they've rejected that offer.
Oh.
And that National Amusements, the company that controls over 77% of Paramount Global stock, has entered into a 30-day exclusive negotiations period with Skydance Media to try to work out a deal. The news boosted the price of Paramount stock itself, and that was good. Now, as you may recall, the plan would involve Skydance purchasing National Amusement for a price still to be determined. Then Skydance would have the ability to merge itself with Paramount Global.
Nice graphic for the merge.
Thank you. This merger will be one of the contingencies of Skydance actually buying National Amusements. The deal would involve all of Paramount Global, not just the studios. So the band, and most important to us, Star Trek, would stay together. Now, David Ellison, head of Skydance, has already met with the Paramount board of directors ahead of any actual deal. Skydance already has a working relationship with Paramount, serving as a co-producer on Mission Impossible, Top Gun, Transformer, and Star Trek movies. All right, next up.
Friend of the show, Dr. Mohammed Noor, will be returning with a new season of BioTrekkie with the Admiral, just in time for the premiere of Season 5 Star Trek Discovery. Joining Dr. Noor, as always, will be actress Jane Brooke, who played our favorite Admiral Katrina Cornwell on Discovery. Noor and Brooke will discuss alien life forms on Discovery and speculate on how real-world biology concepts could explain them. The first video of the new season of BioTrekkie with the Admiral premieres on YouTube on Sunday, April 7th. We'll have the link to BioTrekkies on their YouTube channel in our show notes over at episode 156, Parlez-vous Français, Admiral Janeway, over at thetopicistrek.com.
Alrighty.
And Strange New Worlds has two episodes up for a Hugo Award in the Best Dramatic Presentation Short Form category. Both The Old Scientist, This Old Scientist, and the Space Subspace Rhapsody are finalists, along with two episodes of Doctor Who and an episode each of Loki and The Last of Us. The Hugo Award is voted on by members of the current year's World Science Fiction Convention, and the winners will be announced at Worldcon. This year's convention will be held August 8th through 12th in Glasgow, Scotland.
Okay, before we go north to Canada, we got anything happening in the chat over here?
We do. Jared has said Admiral Cornwell and Admiral Vance, two good Merles from Discovery.
Indeed. Agree.
And he also says, I love those old scientists.
Oh, yeah. That was a fun episode. As we all talked about it.
Oh, he also made a comment about the Christmas ornament. Beverly's jacket looks very similar to David Tennant ornament jacket from a couple of years back.
They just swapped the head out.
It was kind of flying away. Yeah.
We'll use that part of the mold, and then we just kind of...
They just swap the heads out.
It's like the original Star Trek toys. We're just going to paint some G.I. Joes.
Yeah.
Like Legos.
Right.
All right. In Vulcan, Alberta, Canada news.
Yay! There we go. We need a sound effect for that.
There's the famous FX 1995A.
Yeah. Sold infamous. 1995, eh?
Someone stole the deflector dish.
Well, while we're waiting for the Vulcan Tourism Center to reopen in May, I was able to find out one thing about Vulcan that we had not covered in the past. Hmm. Apparently, they have a sort of Star Trek Walk of Fame downtown.
Oh, really?
Garrett Wong has a Delta Shield-shaped star on the sidewalk. Ooh, let me advance that there. The plaque features his handprint and signature. And the top portion has a short bio of Garrett, while the bottom has a short bio of Harry Kim.
Plays clarinet, ensign, done.
I couldn't find any more information about other ones that are in downtown Vulcan, but in Street View, I could tell there definitely were two places that had these plaques because you notice the piece of sidewalk has an X through the middle of it rather than just the standard breaks.
Image not found.
Well, exactly. But so I don't know who the other, at least the one other person is, if, and if there are more, because darn it, there were cars parked on this, you know.
Get those out of the way.
I couldn't see the side.
I like the date on the bottom of the plaque. It says Ensign Harry S. L. Kim, Voyager, 1995-2001. It makes it sound like he died at 6 years old.
I know. Yeah. And way before he was ever could be on Voyager.
It was a time travel accident.
He's had one of those, too. Yeah.
He was 32, but it looks like he was 6 years old.
Well, that's cool.
All right. If you still want more Star Trek news, well, you're in luck. In our show notes for this episode, you'll find links to 100 additional stories. Oh. Exactly, Eric. Broken up by series, movies, and other categories. And I've even started now to split up because we've got two of them. I used to just have, you know, Star Trek 4. Now I've got Star Trek 4, like A, which is the Kelvin timeline one.
Prime.
And Star Trek 4 B, JG which is the other verse. One.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Ah, it's getting very complicated.
We're going to need a map to our show notes.
Yeah, you'll find everything, including an article about William Shatner getting a do-over on his death scene from Generations.
Oh, yeah.
On the online game Star Trek Infinite has ceased.
What's this one SpongeBob SquarePants restaurant to open in Sao Paulo, Brazil? How does that fit into our Star Trek theme?
Well, that was in the Paramount Plus section before, so we'll have to. All right. We'll also find one how Zachary Quinto accidentally started a campaign for the role of Spock, which I didn't know about that one either. And you'll find a link to all of these things in the show notes for episode 156. Parlez-vous français, Admiral Janeway? Over at thetopicistrek.com. Now, with that out of the way, comes one of my favorite parts of the show, and that's where I get to say, goodbye, Charlie.
Get out, get out, get out!
I want to stay.
Get out.
Looks like somebody just dropped an ice cream down his back or something.
Or he dropped his ice cream cone.
You dropped your ice cream. You dropped your ice cream.
I think we can afford the rights to that one. Anyway.
If anybody remembers that. Jeez.
We are going to move on. I got to scroll past these 100 links in here. We are going to head out on our main mission with an appropriate sound effect.
I think we better be prepared for this through the Atavacron. Oh, that was invigorating.
Yeah. And we're going to head out on our main mission, which is talking about two episodes of Discovery. So, Chuck, I'm going to have you do the recap of the first episode.
Very good.
And then, Craig, you do the second. I think Craig and I were talking. We think it's probably better just to put them both together and talk about them as a unit.
I think so. That'll work. That'll get us through this quicker. This is Star Trek Disco Very. Oh, Discovery. Sorry, I thought it was two words. Season 5, Episode 1, entitled Red Directive. Has nothing to do with the Red Angel. Trust us. This premiered on, that'd be today as we're recording this, April 4th, 404, Episode Not Found. Written by Michelle Paradise and directed by Olatunde Osunsanmi. Thank you. I'll try not to sneeze when I say that next time.
Yeah.
The short plot synopsis is that Captain Burnham and the USS Discovery are sent to retrieve a mysterious 800-year-old Romulan vessel until the artifact hidden inside is stolen, leading to an epic chase. Meanwhile, Saru is offered the position of a lifetime, and Tilly's efforts to help end up pulling her into the tangled web of secrecy.
Dun, dun, dun. And Craig?
All right, so Season 5, Episode 2, Under the Twin Moons, premiered, let's see, how far back was it? Oh, it was April 4th,
2020. 3 a.m.
Twin Moons? Are we on Tatooine now?
That's right. Suns, not moons.
Well, you know, they didn't say how many moons it had.
Yeah. It was written by Alan McElroy and directed by Doug Arianokowski.
We're both doing wonderful tonight.
Yeah. Harry Nokowski. On Saru's last mission as Captain Burnham's number one, the team ventures to a seemingly abandoned planet to hunt for what might be the greatest treasure in the galaxy.
Might and no, it's not, be.
It's not the cup of Christ.
No, they don't. They have to choose wisely. And we'll get to some choices here and whether or not they're wise choices in a second. So it was, first of all, it felt like forever since we'd seen, you know, new episode of Discovery, because it was forever since we saw a new episode of Discovery.
It was.
I thought it was interesting that they did a recap
of the last season.
Yeah, I think just touching on really a few of the things that were pertinent, as you often do in the recaps, like, okay, this is
what happened to Book. This is what happened to Tilly. Yeah, they're giving us some little bit of backstory kind of thing.
Previously on Discovery.
Mm-hmm. And we have the focus on these couple of episodes was on a few characters. I feel with like, we're going to go through a journey with these characters in particular. The first one was Culber, who found out that they're going to mothball the spore drive, which I thought was a really odd thing to do. I guess they're saying that all the research work.
You mean Stamets?
Stamets.
Yeah,
sorry.
Stamets. They were at that little cocktail party, whatever, and everybody was celebrating.
Right, and he had his little badge on that said,
gloomy,
you know,
God. Yeah, luminary. Well, I'll just go do luminary science.
Luminary. I kind of laughed a little bit when I saw that.
Well, especially since the badge lights up. It was very luminary itself.
It was like, well, I don't know. What should we call him? I don't know. Just pull this out of the hat. And scientific luminary.
That's a term we use for people in the keynotes that really we don't know what to call them. They're just here to tell us cool stuff. So we call them a luminary.
Yeah.
So he feels like, well, I have no legacy. You know, who's going to remember me? Because, and I'm thinking, well, dude, it was the spore drive and it like did lots of stuff. You know, I think that would be enough, but he feels like, I guess that, you know, I'm too young to retire and I what am I going to do with myself type of thing. So he's definitely one of the journeys we're going to be going on with. Yep. I think that he was maybe taking a wrong turn at one point. He's waxing poetic about Sung and saying, oh, you know, what a legacy that is.
Here we are hundreds of years later, still mentioning Alton Sung's name.
I don't think you want to hitch yourself to that star. You know,
not exactly.
Wrong
place. I get the sentiment, but it's a little misplaced there.
We also find out that, what have we got here? Saru.
listener Diane says, maybe Stamets will start a podcast.
Maybe. Don't give him any ideas.
She also threw a whole bunch of Star Wars facts at us, but we're not putting that in here because on this show, the topic is Trek.
I'm sure by that time in the timeline, they got like 500 versions of Podcasting for Dummies.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not writing anymore.
Well, Chuck. One other thing that like right up front, I was wondering if they were going to be doing this because they've done it every year up to this point. So of course they were going to.
Oh, the intro graphics. Yes.
The intro graphics. I feel like they're a lot more on point specific. You know what they are right away than they've ever been before. Some of the stuff we've already seen. And so we assume that all the other stuff is stuff we're going to be seeing.
The infinity symbol, I was like, well, how's that fit in? You know, and everything until they actually showed it, but everything else was like, okay, well, that's, you know, you kind of get an idea a little bit before the show started, except for the infinity thing threw me off.
I was a little distracted and I wasn't watching. And then I watched it on the second one. I'm going, seen it. You know, usually they scatter these things out a little more.
Oh yeah.
They dumped them all in the first episode.
Yeah. And in the infinity one, we have a long shot of this ball running around inside of it. And then the next shot is a close up of it. Like, no, really, this.
Look here.
It's yes.
It's future NASCAR.
Pay attention to this here.
I'm sure that will come back. If it was more pronounced in the intro than it was in the episode.
And so I'm wondering if these will update over time this season, because like I said, we've seen almost all this stuff, and it's just the second episode. Matter of fact, right. We've seen all this stuff.
That's what I was wondering.
That seems very unlike what happens. Wait, usually.
Was this screenshot? Were these screen grabs from the first or second episode?
I believe they were from the first episode. So they might. Do you think they updated on the second?
No, they were also in the second.
Okay. Yeah, I think they're pretty much the same then.
Well, the second episode had the twin moons.
Yeah.
Planet in it, so that's figured in there. But the mold that the pieces are going to go into is in there, so yep. We've seen that.
I'm sorry, for a second, you know, talking about all these spores and stuff, I was like, there was mold. Oh, yeah, that kind of
spores
mold.
And mold, and it's just it's been a while that you know they just kind of dust everything off.
Don't they clean that stupid?
That thing, that shape looked very familiar. I don't know why, but it looked like. Something Michael Okuda would have put stickers on a doorway or a portal or something before. The lines were calling back to something. I couldn't quite place it. So the first time I saw that little circle in the drawing book that the synth was flipping through, like, whoa, we've seen that somewhere before. Something very similar.
But we find out that there is apparently an 800-year-old ship that's been located at the edge, what is it? The edge of the Beta Quadrant.
We just got old ships laying around everywhere.
Yeah, the Discovery has to go and retrieve something from it. Apparently, the dots just can't do that. You know, you think, well, there's a probe out there that found this thing. Why can't you just go and? But they nope. Got to send you guys out there to do it. And they get out there and. Run into trouble. Now,
wait a minute. What's funny is they sent one ship already, and to add insult to injury for those people, they sent Discovery, who showed up
before
them and left after them.
Yeah,
it's like poof. Yeah.
So this is what I'm calling. Let's see if I can find my. I'm calling this action sequence number one in the episode. In these two episodes, whoops, that's back here.
Well, that is action sequence at number one came right at the beginning.
Well, it did one of those things
of a prequel thing.
It's weird because
a sneak peek.
You have the you know before the you know 4 hours earlier or whatever it was.
Right.
The thing is that scene was the teaser.
Yep.
Scene that they showed at San Diego Comic-Con last year. So we. Right. Have seen this scene so many times, and we knew watching it that we weren't even coming into the beginning of the scene. So it had to be a case of, oh, now we're going to jump back in time. And this is how I got in this crazy situation.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
And when did she start playing the saxophone?
Yeah. This is where it got kind of strange to me.
Maybe she was trying to make a joke. I don't know.
There's a big gap between season four and season five, who had to take up a hobby.
Well, that's what I'm saying is it was getting kind of the dialogue in these action sequences felt like we have to do something that's not what we normally do. And these one-liners that Burnham was throwing off just seemed off. They seemed weird.
I agree.
To me anyway, I don't know. What did you guys think?
Some of them were good. I mean, the dialogue back and forth, release your tractor beam or it'll tear itself apart. But I think it was trying to inject a moment of humor. Like, I'd rather not die here. I've got a saxophone lesson this afternoon. That almost sounded something more like what Mariner would say than what Michael would say.
Yeah, never a dull moment and that type of thing.
Well, she's grown as a person. You know, she's changed. Obviously, she's playing... She says she's playing music now.
I don't know. She didn't say she played very well.
She's not as stoic as remember season one when she was still following a lot of her Vulcan instincts, you know, or that she grew up with. So I think she's grown as a person a little bit, and there's a little bit of humor, and you see her smiling a lot more and caring about people a lot more.
Oh yeah, there was a lot of soft moments in these two episodes as well.
So I didn't have a problem with this. The only problem I have with generally in the show as a whole is that all the officers seem like not stuck up's not the right word, but kind of
rigid.
You know, making their point and making sure they're seen, you know, or they're you know what I'm saying? It seems like instead of being a cooperative situation, they're all like, oh, you know, I got this and I must do this and I've got to do this and, you know, just to make them stand out more. You know, rather than being cooperative, they're being a little abrasive.
So are you talking about specifically
Rainer
and Burnham?
No, I'm talking about the whole Discovery as a whole, just the way they wrote it. It seems like they're our characters are kind of rigid and not as cooperative as it feels like they should have been. But I think that's changed also because the crew's, you know, been together for a while now.
Well, certainly Kovic was the same as always.
Hasn't aged today. He still looks 800.
Yeah.
It's the glasses that do it. That's an interesting point because clearly we had issues with Rainer being, you know, butting heads with Burnham, and then he's brought it for an inquiry and he's butting heads with everybody that's on, you know, the council that's
he should. He's doing. A Cylon.
No.
That's Leo Ben Conoy sitting in front of you.
And of course, in that scene where it was, you know, we definitely are getting vibes of Burnham in front of, you know, the committee, if you will, because
listener Diane, maybe it was a callback to Lucille Ball who played the sax badly.
Maybe so.
Put it past the writers. But again,
at the very end, she sits down to do a little concert and it's like,
that's more of a Lower Decks thing.
Yeah.
Wah, 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 wah.
Everybody's looking forward to it and she, you know, she blows it.
I just started last week. So give me a break.
But I felt like with Rainer that it was meant to have this feeling of deja vu that here you have an officer, a bridge officer, who is all about the mission and is kind of so obsessed by it that they don't listen to reason, and something bad, in this case, almost happens. So really, this for Rainer, it's going to be this arc where Burnham is going to kind of have to lead him through a change. Mm-hmm. And he is going through the same situation that she had gone through 5 years ago.
Right. They mentioned that towards the end of the second episode that she got Saru gave her a second chance. We won't give any spoilers, but I saw that one coming about 10 seconds before it happened. I went, I'll bet she's going to. Yep. You can see that look in her face. And then
Before Discovery started, before it started. I forget when that novel came out that I reviewed, and you can go back and find that in our archives. But Saru and Michael they did not have the best relationship because they were both,
Yeah, they had a rough start, and
I mean, in the book, they were trying to, they were trying to both vie for the number one position, and then you kind of saw that. Well, you did see that in the first episode where she was nudging him out of the way to, you know, look at her science computer.
Right. Being very logical about what she was doing, which, you know, kind of was that Rainer thing about, well, we have to stop Maul and
Locke.
Thank you. From getting away. And this is what we've got to do. We've got to, you know, do this thing. No, don't do that. We've got to do this thing. And then he goes and just tells his ship fire and, you know, set off those explosives. And that's kind of like what Burnham was doing at the beginning, just very logically, not whatever thinking about necessarily the consequences, ignoring all the advice, just go ahead and do the thing.
When Kovach pulled them into that white space, the infinity room, he called it. Anybody else feel like they got hauled into the construct on the Matrix?
That's what I was thinking.
Where's all the weapons? All these shelves of weapons.
It's phasers.
Well, it brought a couple things. I mean, it's a very Trek thing to do. It's a very Next Generation thing to do because it reminded me of, you know, when Q was doing It's a Wonderful Life with Picard, and also when Data and Lore in season 3 of Picard.
Right, they went to that white space.
So, and that's why it's, you know, some people like it. I think it's a bit too dramatic, you know, type of a
It took me about 10 seconds to figure out Maul was Eve Harlow. She was on our last cruise and actually went on one of our snorkeling expeditions with us.
Okay.
I got a picture with her without paying for it.
Yeah, whispering it helps on a podcast.
She's much shorter in real life. They make her look tall. And I couldn't tell if they put her in boots or something. But yeah, that was like, it took me a second. The funny thing is, for part of the cruise, she wore that wig. And she was rocking out at one of the concerts about a few rows in front of us and off to our right. And you know, I pointed to Craig. I said, check out that girl up there. She's like really rocking around in her chair and everybody maybe tapping a foot. And then,
a couple times they announced her as, you know, being on Star Trek. And I was like, you know, who is she? And I went, oh, she's on season 5.
Yes, later they said it's season 5 coming up. And sweet young lady. And she brought her mom along on the trip and they went on the snorkeling trip and, you know, had a very nice talk with her for a while. So it was tough for me to, this is one of the few instances where I've met an actor before I saw them play, before they saw them do their job. Usually it's the other way around. I went, this is weird.
So what did we think about talking about this? What did we think about action sequence number 2?
Which the nosedive?
It looks like a couple of ostriches sticking their head in the sand.
Yeah. It's the motorcycles and then the Antares and Discovery ditching themselves and using the force field to stop the avalanche.
I'm going to say, I think they really spent their budget on that first episode. I thought the first episode was beautiful. Everything was great. This scene is kind of ridiculous as it is with the stop, you know, the motion grab that you got here, the screen grab. The whole thing was really cool to see.
It was visually very well done. I thought so too. I also liked the fact they pulled one of our tricks. They did the 3-screen thing. When they were on the speeders talking to each other.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun.
That was different. It looked like they were trying to do a comic book thing because there's 2 panels and all of a sudden there's 3. And I was like, what?
We can do that.
Yeah.
The weird thing about these, both of these sequences, there was a point near the end of both of them where I said, this feels like it's a motion simulator ride.
Yes.
Because right at the end, you kind of have a voice off the side saying, okay, we're all set now. And you find yourself zooming in on the end of the story and it kind of peters to a stop. And that's where you kind of, okay, now I'm fastening your, you know, buckles and get on out of here.
Yeah. I thought this was a bit of a trope, the way that Maul and Locke gave the ultimatum of, all right, catch us or save the villagers. Like, oh man, here we go again. I thought that was, and of course you have to go save the villagers any way you can. So I thought that was, a bit not very fresh.
I get that. I do think it's a little ridiculous that they slam the ships into the ground. Because you would think that would be, wouldn't that compromise some structural integrity a little bit or something?
Well, plus the fact if you were able to, and I don't know if the ship is capable of or not, if you hovered like a foot off the ground, unless it was saying that the force of the avalanche
pushed them back.
Would push them back.
Well, in that case, you would have wedged the other way. And how do they get them out?
Reverse.
run the sequence in reverse.
And I love the fact that when Discovery materializes in front of the space dock, it's like shaking off the dust.
Wait, we saw the robots cleaning off the glass.
Yeah. We're a little squeegee.
Yeah.
Change your oil, sir. No, I'm fine. I'm fine. Just go away.
Well, and then towards the episode, Saru gets a proposition.
Yeah. Now that can you clarify that a bit more, please? Because that sounded bad.
He gets propositioned.
He gets proposed to.
Yeah.
Tarina says, maybe we should, what'd she say, codify our relationship? He says, are you asking me to marry you? Well, that's what it's called in some cultures, I guess.
Yeah.
So, but that comes into conflict because he's got to make this choice of his job. And now she's involved and she says, well, you have to do the only logical thing. You basically take me out of the equation to make your decision. And he went,
that's okay. Be a little hard.
Yeah.
To do.
Well, you are part of the equation. She didn't realize that, you know, because there's a third option. Go wherever she's going and stay with her the whole time.
Head back to Navarre.
Right.
It's not logical. Hey, by the way, in this picture that you got here, behind them, it almost looks like out the window you can see the Enterprise from like the motion picture. You know, it's coming over Earth.
Yep.
That's what it does look like that a little bit, doesn't it?
I forget what she was looking at Discovery because that's the scene where it shows up and it's like shaking the sand off of it, I think that's that scene.
And then finally, Kovich
this is when they come back from the second mission. That's right.
Okay. And by the way, speaking of how visually cool this whole episode was, we're going past this part, but
go right ahead.
When Burnham kind of fallen off of the ship when the warp bubble was coming apart. And then she went to Discovery. And when she was floating towards the front, the glass of the bridge, and she just went, she transported right through it.
That's the part in that sequence where I felt like at the dear old long gone, Star Trek, The Experience, you kind of end up back in Vegas. And I felt like this was, the audience kind of coming through the front view screen of Discovery onto their bridge. It just had that feeling like if you turn this into a motion simulator ride, it would work just fine.
Yeah. I thought that was a cool thing, by the way. Yeah.
I also thought it was interesting. Well, okay. Here's one of my questions here. So book us along because this is the lifestyle that he lives. It's the same one that these two live. First of all, Burnham lived it as well. So she should know pretty much all the same things because it seems like she did in other situations. But second of all, in this scene, I thought it was really cool to have this visual of all the fake warp signatures.
Yes.
Because we'll often hear about, there's all these fake warp signatures. This, you see actual things coming out and
taking off.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like 12 of them or whatever it was.
But overall, I felt like they were always a step ahead of Book with whatever they were doing. And he shouldn't have been that far off to be the expert that they brought on this mission.
Right. True.
Well, there's a lot to unpack with his story.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. He wasn't there when they took off.
No. I just felt like between him and Burnham, they really should know a lot of what these things are. Now, I don't know if she recognized the ring that they threw that opened up the hole in the bottom of the Romulan ship. Because she seemed to be getting ready to run away from it.
That was an eternity. Opened. When somebody throws something on the floor in front of you, run! It's going to either blow up or do something else. This was, I thought that was, it's like, throw it. The camera stays on it for a couple seconds. Then it goes to Burnham for a couple seconds. Then it goes back. And it's like, you could have been long gone by that time, lady.
The other thing I think is a little too convenient because they're so far in the future. I know a lot of things we haven't seen in Star Trek yet, you know, that they're introducing. And one of those is she fell through the hole. All of a sudden, a whole suit materializes around her.
Well, they've been showing that for a couple of seasons. That's,
I know. I'm just saying, especially now that they're in the future, it's like, what technical problems do they actually have anymore? You know,
well, as you notice,
the nacelles aren't even attached to the ship. You know,
when they lost their phasers, they just
made new ones.
She made a new rifle.
Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a phaser out of my sleeve.
Again?
Yeah. Well, she took her phaser and went, they were shooting. She goes, I need something bigger.
Yeah, why didn't she just like make 16 phasers and shove them in the eye sockets of that thing? Anyway.
Why don't you just make a lightsaber?
That's not
the questions we can't answer on the topic.
The topic is track, Craig.
My goodness. Oh, speaking of the ship itself, the Romulan ship.
Yes.
I didn't get a chance to go back and check on this one, but let's see. And this is a visual. Sorry for you people listening to the podcast, but is that thing that usually has revolving red lights on it that
we
see in it? Okay, because you know it has that look to it.
It did. I thought this was it
does kind of look like that a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's I would have spotted that in an instant. This is something different, and I thought this was this almost looked like what they're trying to build with that little, you know, pieces and parts stand.
It's the Genesis device laid down.
Well, no, I was getting to that because what did you all think about?
I think we're coming to a big issue.
The callback to TNG. With
all right, I had two thoughts about it myself. The first one was, oh, poor Dr. Noor. Because we talked about it when we interviewed him, and I know it's in his book as well. He had real problems with the chase.
The progenitors and...
The concept that in a primordial environment, you drop something into the ooze, essentially, and every one of these species goes through all the different stages of evolution of complete decimation of the planet and then rebirth and decimation again and, you know, all the eons, and end up looking humanoid as the main intelligent species in each of those civilizations.
Sure, why not?
But the other thing was, all right, so the Romulan scientist had figured out how the device that they used worked. And as near as I can tell, what he's got, if he figured that out, is a device that will put some seed code into DNA. And if you wait a couple of billion years, something might happen.
Something might happen.
I don't really. They didn't say that they were creating life. He just said he was dropping in this bit of code, the seed code, into that. If you consider the seed code as that is the first code ever, all right, maybe I'd buy that is the beginning of life on every single one of these worlds, even though that still doesn't bring you to the exact same evolution. But somehow I just felt like I didn't, and I watched the chase again to, you know, pay attention to it, and I couldn't necessarily get the feeling that they were creating life itself. What do you guys think?
I liked the callback. I'm like, oh, it's a nice way to tie it back, you know, to the Picard days. What I started to pick up on was, hey, there's this thing that could potentially create life, or in the wrong hands, who knows what?
Genesis.
Like Genesis. That's what I said. This is a Genesis plot line. Are we going to be chasing the whole season to find out, you know, maybe it's a recipe for cookies again?
A recipe for cookies.
Yeah, for biscuits, yeah. I don't know, because I think as we get closer, we'll get a better sense of what they think that it will do and what it actually does, because it seemed fairly benign to me, and that it was, like I said, it was very much the beginning of something that you're not going to get something in 5 minutes or 5 years or 500 years out of this.
It's like on Hitchhiker's Guide when they ask the computer the question, come back in a million years and I'll have an answer for you.
the other thing I kind of picked up on was we've got a whole season. We're chasing down pieces of a puzzle. It kind of feels like Harry Potter and the Horcruxes too.
Well, it's a common trope to have, you know, the chase and having clues along the way.
I don't want to be disappointed. This is the last season. Make it a good one. But I also started thinking how nice they're making Saru's life. You know, he's got a wedding proposal.
Their prediction is going to come true?
I'm thinking they're going to kill him. He's going to die before the end of the season. And we're all going to be very, very sad.
So listener Diane,
not even think Genesis, but the book is the Grail Diary.
Got that. Yep.
Using that to seek the artifact.
Yep. I got a bit of Grail Diary out of that too. Like, thank you, Dr. Jones.
By the way,
Indiana reference, when they were finding the clues in the second episode, they, they're headed to Beta Z because they only have half the clues. They don't have the other side of the coin that was burned into the guy's hand. Move the rock, Saru. Now we have, I was getting some Indiana Jones vibe out of this too. Maybe we've just been watching way too many movies.
So has everybody else been watching a whole lot of movies.
Let's just send him on a hero's quest and be done with it.
Another question I had that we don't know the answer to yet, because they made a point. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just, we're talking about all the callbacks to other movies. Well, they're putting together a puzzle. Reminds me of the Archimedes clock. to get the two pieces and put them together.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Well, I was wondering because they made such a we lingered on this a while, and I'm calling this person the Jake Gyllenhaal wannabe that Tilly is hanging around with, and she goes over to him and she's like, she leaves the group to go over and talk to him. And then when he starts to get a little, maybe it is hot in here. She says, I think you should go.
Yeah. Although I did like her playful nature of, I couldn't really take all the cadets down to an ice planet. Could I?
No,
she's going back and forth. And then when she tells him to leave, she turns around. She's got smile down face smile. Like that was awesome, so Tilly to go waffle like that back and forth. She's not even sure how she feels about this thing.
Processing the whole thing.
Stupid Andorian champagne.
if they were not setting up Starfleet Academy, I don't know what they were doing.
Well, I mean, I think that's fairly obvious that we're getting definitely vibes, clear vibes that, Tilly is going to return to the Academy after the mission is over and that she is the link to Starfleet Academy at this point.
I think the 80s called and they want her hair back.
Well, her hair is her hair. I don't think you can do much about her hair.
I think it was a little more 80s than it was in previous seasons. That's just me. But
she's had a different configuration.
I'm not a hairstylist.
The 3180s,
The 3180s want their hair back.
Right. Parachute pants came back and went, and so did all these hairstyles.
I had another, I'm just kind of bouncing around here with some of my observations that one of the things I thought was cool. Do I have the right one here?
Book's message on the dark web. I mean, the dark com, whatever it was.
No,
the cap. We've seen something like this before.
So what happened, what we're referring to is that,
in the initial fight scene, Maul and Locke fire their guns and incapacitate two of the people. They don't kill them. They just like surround them with this immobilizing field because they could still talk, but they couldn't move.
Cones of silence.
If they couldn't move, how did they talk? Oil can.
Yeah. Cause Burnham says, I'll be back in a minute. I'm thinking, do you know how much oxygen there is in there? Just curious.
That's true too.
And then did they ever go back and get him? Because she fell through the hole.
They made a big deal about that. That as she's chasing them, or I think after she ends up falling out of the ship, that she says, this is what happened to them, and their life support is running low. And then you hear Saru later on saying, we've got them. They're in sick bay right now being checked over. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. Good.
They definitely were picked up.
Yeah.
We do find out that when Book sends his message out on the dark web, he gets a response fairly quickly, mind you.
Hang on.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Hang on before we move on. So, what was I going to say? I'll forget my train of thought. It was about these bubbles they're in. I think this says something about Maul and Locke because they're not
trying to kill anybody.
Mm-hmm. They could have easily shot somebody and killed them. Cause I thought, maybe we're going to
just like the Klingons in the book I reviewed.
Yeah. I thought maybe we're going to lose somebody because of a dangerous situation, but they didn't actually kill anybody.
And they kind of had a very relaxed conversation with Fred.
Just Fred.
Very data-like, obviously.
Right. So, yeah, the conversations they were having were, I know that they were going for kind of like a movie version Bonnie and Clyde type thing,
yeah,
but without all the killy part in it.
Right.
And so you have this playful dialogue between the two of them. And obviously, their relationship is a complicated one for Book, even before with the second reveal about this, is that they seem to be very happy together, whereas he and Michael are not together, even though they're in the same place.
Yep.
But then we find out that Maul is the daughter
of his mentor,
of the previous Cleveland Booker,
the fourth.
And
that puts an interesting wrinkle into the situation.
And I can't remember when he told the story about how he got the name and how it was the Dread Pirate Roberts, deal. Did the previous Cleveland Booker retire and pass it on to him? I can't remember.
Either.
He's telling it last season.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back and look at that. Cause I don't know if something happened there that she has bad feelings towards him because of that, or whether she just, that name is like, fingernails on a chalkboard type of thing to say Cleveland Booker. I don't know.
I'm not sure either, but I was trying to put the pieces together. And when he was mentioning that, I was like, so he's her uncle?
Well, they're not really related because he was just given the name from the previous person who had it.
Oh, that's right.
By that previous person to him.
Right. But he said, it's the closest thing I have to family.
Right.
The I still want to know. They went down to Lyrek, Michael and Saru, and they start getting attacked as they approach this place.
Hoping that the statue would like put itself back together and attack them.
I was ready for that hand to go.
There was definitely, when the probes started attacking, there was a callback to first season episode of TNG. Welcome to Minas, the Arsenal of Freedom. Probe gets destroyed, another one comes along. Although these didn't seem to get any smarter.
No.
It took all of their wits to come up with an idea to create an EMP to disable them for a while. How did Maul and Locke know about this and defeat the same thing a little bit earlier?
They came from the other end of the valley and they didn't know that happened.
They snuck up on it.
Tunneled underground?
Yeah, exactly. They're expert tunnel makers.
They pop their heads out. Oh, I must have taken a wrong turn in Albuquerque.
Oh, and we speak about callbacks and nods and so forth.
Yes.
Listener Diane was the one who pointed out to me. It registered for a second, then I forgot about it, but they call something shiny.
Yes. Yeah. Firefly. Yes.
Yeah. They said that several times.
We're after a bigger shiny. Like, cool.
I did pick up on that too. Yeah.
All right. Do we have any other thoughts on these two episodes? If not, before we rate them, I've got one thing that I'm going to throw out there as you're a bit crazy, but
again, I thought they were visually stunning. I thought they looked fantastic.
Very well done.
I do like kind of the direction they're going with this, with a story where they're trying, they're starting to figure out what they're actually looking for. And, you know, I knew going into this that it was going to be kind of a more of an adventure, you know, treasure thing.
Well, I'm thrilled, first of all, to have Tilly back, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
The season.
Yeah, absolutely. So, no, I like what I've seen so far.
All right. Well, we'll get to ratings in a second, but at the end of the first episode, we had a This Season on Discovery.
Yes.
And I didn't, you know, I wasn't going to try to stop and like look at every frame because there were two episodes to watch a couple of times and do screen grabs and do
notes. I think I know what you're talking about. I want to see if we're talking about the same thing.
But there was one shot. Well, actually, there were two shots. The first one didn't really. There's a second shot in it, and I'll have to describe it, obviously, for the listener. But we see a ship in a cloud, and it clearly is a Constitution-class starship. And here is my theory. We know that there's an episode that involves mirrors. Is this the Defiant?
Ooh.
That's a good idea. I didn't think about that.
I did
try my best to pause it when you see the hull a little bit better in the first scene.
Yeah, it was. I couldn't make out enough to really just make anything out of that.
Gas and stuff around. I was like, well, I can't read it.
They did that on purpose.
That's a good question.
I don't know, but it just struck me that, well, I doubt it's the Enterprise. What would be doing this? And if we have an episode called Mirrors, or I forgot the actual title is, but has Mirror in it, I just feel like, okay, that's the gateway to get to the Mirror universe.
If I'm not sure, because like you said, that first little shot was one little and not very clear, but it looked like the ship, whatever this is, was a little tattered, you know, like it obviously it's been around for a long time. So I'm not sure if it came brand new through that thing or it's been sitting around like the Romulan ship for a long time.
Right. It could very well be because, I mean, we don't know in the Mirror Universe, we know they had it, but we don't know how they were treating it. You know, we just know that they had it.
This could be Lorca riding in on a white horse.
I don't think so.
Wow. That would be quite the thing. We always wonder what happened to him. Now we find out.
Hey, what if it's Lorca Prime? He was in the Mirror Universe and he finally made his way out.
Yeah, I like it. Right. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm telling you, I like it. I like it. All right. Well, let us rate these two episodes. And I know we talked about them in a bunch, but I think we get a basic sense of, we know that the first episode had what I call action sequence one and two, which were the, I call Burn 'Em in a Bubble. And then the motorcycle race.
You're renaming the episodes now.
I am Burn 'Em in. Cause I thought it was, first of all, you have, Washakun and I can't remember who the other person was.
Reese,
who get caught in bubbles. Then Burnham gets caught in the warp bubble. So lots of bubbles and bubbles. So wonderful, wonderful. Then we have Under the Twin Moons, where they go down to the planet and are not attacked by the giant statue. Disappointed, disappointed.
Yeah.
All right. So let's start with.
Hey, so we're going to rate each individual.
Yes, each individually.
If so we don't, we're going to ruin listener Diane's spreadsheet.
Well, she said, oh, it's your spreadsheet now. I'm handing it over to you guys.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Okay.
We don't record any of this. It's like, whose line is it anyway? The points are meaningless.
I have to go back and listen to 156 episodes to get them all.
Let's start with episode one, Red Directive, that begins the whole thing. And again, that has the two, just to put in perspective, it has those two things that happen. You have the initial trying to catch Maul and Locke, and then you have the race to try to catch them on the planet and all the things that are happening to do a lot of set of Book's arrival and Tilly's arrival and things like that. So we'll start with Chuck.
Okay. I have one more quick comment.
Yes, certainly.
What was a Tribble doing?
It was climbing up the wall
and then fell down and ran away fairly quickly, no less.
And nobody cared.
Yeah. If I saw that, I'd be like, oh my God, we're infested by tribbles. Where there's one, there's a thousand more you don't see.
However, that, well,
maybe they found a way to neuter them in the future.
Yeah. I mean, they found a way to reverse, you know, what that idiot did. And
what's his name? Come on, Edward, you got a shirt.
I got me the shirt after it.
So they undid that, and now you can have just a single tribble, and life is wonderful.
All right, who left their tribble running around without a leash? There's a leash law on deck 6.
In that case, we're going to rate the first episode.
And tribbles.
Red Directive, how many? 1 to 10 tribbles.
All right.
There we go.
Yeah, that was funny. It crawled up the wall and then fell.
Yeah.
And then scuttled away. Yeah. Red Directive, episode 1. I am going to give this a solid 8.5. I liked it visually. I thought it was a good kickstart to the season. Mm-hmm. Little mixed up at the beginning with that scene that we've already seen, and then they show it to us again later. But yeah, there were a couple things going, wait, this is starting to feel really familiar. But I generally liked it.
Okay. And Craig, what do you think of Red Directive?
I'm going to say the same thing that Chuck did, 8.5, really for the same reasons. It was a great kickstart. It looked fantastic to watch. I don't know, it was good seeing Tilly and, you know, some other characters again. So, yeah.
Okay. I didn't want to go to 8, and I felt 8.5 was a bit too high, so I'm going to go 8.25 on this one to split the difference. One thing this episode did, and we talked about already, and we just talked about again now, that I just don't like. I don't like it when I see it in something is action, action, action. 4 hours earlier.
No, right. Right.
No, I don't like that. Overall, I felt the episode was good, not great. I don't think it's a bad thing when I talk about the action sequences feeling like they were motion simulator ride, because they felt like I would like to see that as a motion simulator ride. So that it's not a bad thing. I did think that we were doing too obvious a bunch of setups for the characters, though. Their subtlety was hitting you over the head.
Yeah. Yeah. It was show you so and so is going through this situation. And oh, look, over here, somebody's doing the same thing, just to make sure you remember that situation. It did seem a little obvious. And we may have to wait for some of those to pay out, because they never really got back to Stamets in the second one. He was in it solving problems with Blue, but
yeah,
they weren't getting back to that feeling of lack of belonging.
Yeah.
Or purpose.
All right.
Okay.
And we'll go in reverse for the second episode.
Oh, and Diane says, yep, she's updated the spreadsheet and has made it public for any listener. We'll have the link in the show notes.
All right.
All righty. Very good. Then we'll go to the second one, Under the Twin Moons. And that is where they go down to the planet itself to investigate, to try to find this clue. At that point, they kind of figure, well, maybe it's here. Oh, no, it's just another clue where to find it. And we have the Indiana Jones bit in as well. We also have the part where Rayner is called up before the board and Burnham ends up having him be her number one now that Saru is leaving. So a lot of things going on in that one as well.
Did they mention his race?
They didn't, but he is in an article I found. He is a Kelleran.
Okay.
Looks like his mom was Vulcan and his dad was a Ferengi.
His mom was Vulcan and he got his ears nipped when he was sterilized.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a cat.
Let's don't talk about his tail.
All right. I'm going to rate this one. I'm going to do another like quarter of a point. I'm going to give this a 7.75. I felt like the attack spheres were way too stupid. That
They were underneath something. They shot as well as stormtroopers. And then when they get desperate, they crash into the something to knock it down.
Right. So they don't even know enough to go
under
down at eye level.
Right.
And shoot. And okay, they're going to keep coming, but all I got to do is hide behind this tree and hide behind this rock and I'll be fine for quite a long time. So it felt like it was dragging out, you know, unnecessarily.
I did like Rayner's appearance to help him give clues. Like, what did they have at the time? What did they think? Like, I think we're going to see more of that come out of him as like the advisor or the idea man to help Michael through the rest of the season.
Right. And I also like the fact that he got him started and then he said, hey, this is your deal. You know, keep going with it. You know, figure it out. I'm just here to, you know, do this thing.
I'm cooking the spaghetti to throw at the wall.
That's right. All right, so that's me. We'll go backwards. So, Craig.
I'm going backwards a little bit more. So I'm going to 7.5 on this one.
Okay.
And I don't know about you two, but the Burnham book, will they or won't they kind of thing gets a little tiring after we've been through it for a while now, you know, but other than that, I mean, I like the, like I said, I like the, where the story's going and they progressed it. And this one, you got to see what Data's, you know, future, offspring, but
that was in the first one.
Was he in the, Fred was in the first one?
Yeah. Because he was on the,
we saw him on the bed in the, I don't know. Anyway, so
this one, you get to see how fast Saru really can run.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you speed up the footage, he runs really fast.
Like a Benny Hill clip there.
This is the Saru show. He was pushing rocks and running. Anyway, I'm going to give it 7.5. Just again, the Burnham book thing is a little tiring.
Oh, we never said what we were rating it on.
This one?
The scale, yeah.
Drones.
Okay, very good. 1 to 10 drones.
Crazy Joe says, I'm here with the hot catchphrase all the kids will be saying tomorrow. How did I get a rash there?
I don't think that's a good, I don't know.
Worst catchphrase ever. No.
I've already heard all the kids say that.
<Ba-dum-bum>. All right, Chuck, what's your opinion of Under the Twin Moon?
I'm with you. I'm going to dial it back just a little bit, but just a little bit to 7.75. The whole scene on the planet struck me as odd. You know, you called it out with stupid drones, and I'm thinking, how did the other two get there so easily and defeat them and get out with their, you know, hieroglyphs and still managed to
it cloaking. Just it, remember they had cloaking.
No,
felt
that's true.
A little off. I mean, again, visually it was very well done. We moved some storylines along with Saru and Trina, and you know, very warm scene at the end where, hey, this is Saru's last day of work. I hope my last day of work is nothing like that. But I'm expecting to go to the headquarters and drink beer with my friends or something.
Well, it could have ended the way that usually does in the cop movies. Like, I'm one day away from retirement.
Boom. Yeah. That's kind of what I was expecting. Maybe not yet, but sometime in this season, I think he's a goner.
Well, that was one of your predictions. So you're rooting for that one.
Yeah, right.
I didn't know it was my prediction, but it's starting to look really promising now.
Oh, by the way, Saru's last day when she said, "We're going to leave this room for you, like here for whenever you want it," and I was like,
"Gross!
That's like a little messy."
Yeah,
who's going to water this?
He comes back, all the plants are dead.
don't ask Tilly; she's not hanging around. So
sorry, Saru, we didn't go to your room for couple of months.
It's something for the lower decks to take care of.
I feel like it's, you know, when the kid goes off to college and they expect their room to be exactly the way it was when they come back. Like, nope.
It's a lot of moisture. There's going to be some mold in here when you get back.
Come back, there's black mold on the wall. So 7.75 is what I give that one.
Okay, so keep your eyes peeled for that, which that's really pretty, I agree with Tilly. It really sounds gross.
We have a lot of bad metaphors. You know, drink the Kool-Aid. No, you don't know the origin of that story.
Not good at all. All right. Well, those are our opinions about the first two episodes of Discovery Season 5, our final season. I like to call it the one final spin.
Yes,
yeah, I did there.
I did see.
Not bad ratings for them. So I think we're off to a fairly good start for the season itself.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, it's just.
I did like Saru's accidental humor. That would be a grave mistake. Was that an attempt at humor?
Yeah, a pun.
Unwittingly.
Yeah.
Not intentionally.
And we're going to be back in 2 weeks to discuss.
Oh, here you go.
Episodes. Oh, what do we got here? I would have thrown a shoe at the screen had she chosen book as her first. Yeah, I thought that was an odd. Well, even Saru said, that's a type I'm talking about. I'm thinking, that's a bad idea.
Hey,
that's
and there's a co-conflict of interest. They had a relationship at one point, and you know, a Starfleet HR had to get involved.
I think Rainer is a much better choice in that
same
regard.
Same thing as Picard and Crusher, you know,
you don't want that.
Yeah.
But we will be discussing those and see how many more clues. Yeah,
hey, Chuck. Yeah. It sucks when your doctor's your wife and, you know.
And I noticed that they got this first piece of the puzzle and it looks like there's only like 5 more pieces. So
I'm going to just 3D print it.
Might have to like have an episode where they don't find something.
They're not going to find one every episode.
Yeah. I got to fill that in way too fast.
Actually, next episode, they'll use some programmable matter and just make the other pieces.
All right.
Turns out that it's the handle of a lightsaber. So it's starting to look like.
No, it's just a gear. Oh, that helps wind that grandfather clock over there.
It's what the progenitors used to grind corn.
They called it maize. All right. Let us prepare to refill the dilithium chamber and to warp on out of here. You can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word, with the number 4.com. And who speaks for you guys?
Well, actually, this is a perfect time to go listen to our podcast because we're coming up on 19 years. So if you want to check us out, go to look for Technorama Podcast. You can search for it in Google and you'll find us at chuckchat.com and listen to every episode in the backlog.
Every episode.
That's right.
All 700 and whatever they are, and all the listener voicemails and all those extra interviews and crazy stuff.
You can do the same with my show, but fortunately my show is much shorter, so it's a lot easier to do that.
I think it was 4 minutes. Astronomy Cast and Grammar Girl and us have about the same number of episodes. It's really bizarre.
Hey, Clinton, there was some time there when you said in 4 minutes or less. I was like, he's lying.
That hasn't happened since 2006.
Yeah, never name a show after a concept you're going to abandon after a while. Anyway, let's move on from that.
See if you can do a retro show on that. There you go. That make April a lot faster.
Hit that theme, boys.
Oh, we're there already.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on X at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't put on the red shirt. Captain, what's that over there?
Just a tribble falling off the wall.